Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast, the penultimate episode of 2014, episode 1147, recorded December 27th, 2014. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, digital photography, all that jazz. 8888-ASK Leo, that's the phone number. This is a show about technology. And being as this is the first show after Christmas and Hanukkah, I have a feeling you'll have questions about some new stuff that you got. Perhaps glad to help. We'll talk a little bit this year, today about this year. Tomorrow we'll talk about what's ahead for 2015. I like to do that. Last show, last weekend of the year is look back and look forward. Big story this year, probably. Well, there's a few. You got to mention the Sony hack, even though that was like the one of the last things of the year. And certainly this is the year of the smartphone. But I think probably the big story is the fight. And this is a story that will continue into next year, the fight over internet freedom, over net neutrality, and who controls the internet. And we've talked so much about it all year long. And the issue, of course, began when the FCC tried to promulgate something they called open internet rules. They were immediately sued by one of the big internet service providers, Verizon, and won in court. The court said the FCC didn't have standing to enforce an open internet. What is an open internet? Well, an internet where the internet service providers don't become gatekeepers, where they don't get to look at the kinds of things that you're doing on the internet and say, well, that's going to cost you, or, well, you can't do that. Sometimes it's called net neutrality, the idea that any bit that travels over the internet is equal to any other bit, and that the people who provide internet service, those people, and that's the Comcast is probably the biggest in the country, but so your cable company or your phone company, whoever's giving you internet service, shouldn't really have any say about what those bits, the speed with which they get come, or they all should be equal. They shouldn't be able to look at what you're doing and say, well, or that's going to cost you, or go to Netflix and say, you see, you're using up so many of these bits that we're selling to these people. You should give us money too. They shouldn't be allowed to do that. That's net neutrality. And pretty much everybody who's not an internet service provider agrees that this is an important feature of the internet. It was how it was created. And you could see, it's pretty quick that you could see how a company who provides internet access might use their control of what we call the last mile, their control of basically you, and turn it into a toll road and say, well, if you want Leo to be able to use Skype, it's going to cost you. Or maybe because we provide phone service ourselves, maybe we just won't let Leo use Skype at all. Or maybe we'll make sure Skype doesn't work so very well. By the way, these things have all happened. Skype shouldn't really work well because then you won't be incented to buy our phone service. See, that would be wrong. And the FCC tried to enforce rules but was stopped. So now the debate is how do you continue? Does Congress get involved? Does the FCC use the Telecommunications Act, which was written originally in the 30s, and declare that internet service providers are essentially utilities and regulated, can be regulated like utilities? A lot of companies think that's a good idea, and there are a lot of companies that don't. A lot of people on both sides of the fence. And actually, I'm kind of on the fence on that one. On the one hand, it's pretty clear that we can't allow internet service providers to become gatekeepers to turn on the toll road. On the other hand, I'm not sure I really want the government involved in the internet. They haven't shown themselves to be particularly good stewards of our privacy, of our security. I'm not sure that they would become particularly good stewards of our internet access. Well, now we're kind of stuck. And this is the big debate that's been raging this year and will be raging into the next year because we're waiting for the FCC to decide what to do. President Obama has said, let's regulate them as utilities. Let's call them common carriers, just like the phone companies. This is called Title II regulation from the 1934 Telecommunications Act. If they do that, unfortunately, it also gives the FCC the power to do things like regulate rates, as they do with the phone company, and other things that everybody agrees would be a bad idea.
Oh, no!
Well, he doesn't like it either. So, I'm sorry. So, we're all a little nervous about that. The president and others say, well, the FCC can use something called forbearance, where they selectively enforce Title II. That always makes me nervous. Yeah, we'll trust them not to overdo it. Yeah, sure, that should work out. It's quite a challenge. I think everybody thinks and agrees that if we only had some real competition in our internet access, in those markets where you have a choice of more than just your cable company and your phone company, generally these things work themselves out. But unfortunately, and we can thank the FCC for this too, in most areas of the country, you have at best two choices, your phone company and your cable company. And, you know, I hate Comcast. Hate them with a passion, with a fire that burns like the flames of the sun. And every time I call them, I feel like I'm about to have a heart attack. And I'm sure you have the same experience. They're the worst because they're monopoly. And every time I do it, I say, well, gee, if there were only one other choice, I would do it. But there isn't. In many markets, there isn't. And that's a problem, right? The Sony hack, that's a big story. Sometimes you feel like you shouldn't really make the story of the year be something that happened like a week ago. But in fact, it really is a huge story. It's the first time we've seen a company brought to its knees by hackers. We've seen hackers deface websites. We've seen them steal 71 million customer records from, was that Target? Yeah. But we've yet to see him really do the damage they did to Sony. Some might even say, well, this is the first kind of cyber warfare, you know, governmental hacking. I think the jury's still out on that. I think the jury's still out on whether, you know, the president and the FBI say, no, it's definitely North Korea that did this. And every security expert I know says, well, that doesn't make any sense. And the government, of course, very conveniently says, well, we have information which we're not going to reveal to you that proves it. And all we can do is trust the government. You know how that works out. So in this post-Snowden age, I don't think anybody is anxious to say, oh, yeah, well, whatever you say, FBI. Must be true. All the evidence points to it just being, either an inside job. In fact, a lot of evidence points to it being an inside job at Sony, a disgruntled employee, or just kind of a rogue hacker group. In fact, linguistic analysis of the hacker's text, and there's only 2,000 words, so it's not a lot of text, points to Russia, not Korea. We know a lot of Russian hackers are out there, not governmental, but just freelancers. So I think the question still is outstanding. Nevertheless, it's pretty horrible. If you were to say one thing that 2014 was, it is the year of the hacker. And I think I've said that for the last 5 years. Because each year they get more bold, more successful. The viruses get nastier. Crypto Locker was a big problem this year. That was the virus. First time we've ever seen this. A virus so skillfully written that people, their data was completely encrypted with strong encryption, unbreakable strong encryption. And then the hacker said, and by the way, give us €300 or $300 and we'll unlock it. And that was a very successful hack. They had millions and millions of dollars earned by the bad guys on that. And nothing we really were able to do about it. The hackers have definitely become even more powerful. I wouldn't have thought that. I would think that the tide would have turned, but it hasn't. This was the year that social media strode onto the world stage, both this year and last year, with Twitter and Facebook and now even Instagram, which is for the first time ever has more active users per month than Twitter. I like Instagram. I like pictures. It's hard to troll people. It's hard to be insulting and mean and ugly with pictures. They're just pictures. I like Instagram for that reason. 8888 Ask Leo, what was 2014 for you? Let's talk about it or help you with your tech problems. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your phone call next. Yeah, that's the problem exactly, Lars in Michigan says. That we've caught our government agencies with so many lies that they've kind of lost our trust. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Happy holidays to you. Our last couple of shows for 2014, we were talking a little bit about what a year this has been in technology. I'll talk a little later about the smartphones of 2014, because I think 2014 was the year, finally, smartphones became the computing platform, without a doubt. But let's go to the phones. Heather Hammond's here. She's working hard, the phone ranger. We're going to make you work double hard. In fact, if you're listening to the show and you say, I can never get in, we're going to keep recording after the show today. We're going to pre-record for a couple of hours. So keep listening, keep calling. Heather and I will be here.
We'll see how this works out. On any given workday, I've only got 3 good hours in me. So
really? So it's just going to deteriorate?
Yeah, I'm going to need some coffee or something.
We'll get you some coffee. I think John just ran out to get some more creamer.
Perfect.
Yeah.
We're good then.
So you have been lining up calls. I see we have a full board. Who should we start with here?
Yes. Well, we'll start with Lynn. Should be quick. She just wants to thank you for something you helped her with in the past year.
I like that kind of call. Thank you, Heather.
Of course you did.
Hi, Lynn in Santa Clarita, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. I called you quite a few weeks ago about getting a Mac computer. I'm a teacher, and I didn't know whether to get a used one or how to get a cheaper Mac.
Right.
And I found that Best Buy does open box deals.
Good.
And I got the $1,300, $1,200 MacBook Air for $900.
Great deal.
Brand new.
Nice.
And so I'm glad I did my research, and I wanted to thank you and suggest that. That's a really good way to go.
It is. You look at it carefully because it's been open, so people have banged on it. But I think that the reason is that in fact, you could thank the state of California for that, because for a while, retailers were reselling as new stuff that had been returned, you know, sealing the box back up and say, oh, no, that's as good as new. It's new. And somebody sued, or I don't know what happened exactly, but the state of California made a law saying you can't do that. You have to sell it as demo, open box, or refurbished. So this is good, and that's a significant savings. I think that's really... great deal. And you're happy with it.
Yeah. And the guy was like, this is the steal of a year. He's like, if you don't buy it, I will.
Yeah. No kidding. Okay. Good job. And you got a full warranty. It's just as if it's new.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you like it? It's working out for you?
I love it. I'm all decking it out now with ways to protect it.
Nice. Well, enjoy your new machine. I'm glad that worked out.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
You too. Bye.
Take care, Lynn. Sam in San Diego. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Good morning there, Leo.
Good morning, Sam. How are you?
I'm doing fine, man. Hey, look, I got a couple of questions if I may bother you with.
Okay, get a little closer to the phone or pick up the handle.
There we go. Oh, how's that, better?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
I got a little excited.
You're like one of them singers when you get really loud, you move the microphone away.
True.
What can I do for you?
I did myself a favor, and got rid of my Sony Vaio XP, and I got a good deal on a Sony Vaio E-Series with the Windows 7.
Ah!
So I jumped on it. So before I start getting on this thing, I said, you know what? Before I started going into the factory settings any further, I thought I'd better call my buddy Leo up and make sure that I don't get
sure.
here.
Sure, yeah.
I shouldn't be, or...
Yeah.
Any tips that I should be looking for to add on?
Well, I'll tell you, Luke, there's a few things you ought to do. First thing I would do, Windows 7 is nice. I like Windows 7. It's not the current Windows. It's, of course, we're up to 8. But I think 7 is the last great Windows, at least until 10.
Right.
And so I think that that's not a bad choice. Of course, the very first thing you do, you've already done, which is you immediately run Windows Update and you get it up to date. And you did that?
Yes.
And you're going to keep that up to date, and it's automatic in Windows 7. Also, I would make sure that the firewall is turned on and that I would download, because Microsoft didn't start bundling an antivirus with Windows until 8.
Well, what kind of firewall? You mean
Get download Microsoft. It's free. It's Microsoft Security Essentials.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And you go to Microsoft.com/Security Essentials. You can get it for free. That will an antivirus is not the end all in protection, but it certainly is a good thing to have in case you do something wrong, and at least it'll warn you.
Well, here's another one. Now, I noticed that I always got to keep adding my password to get on.
That's good. Now, you can turn that off if no one has access. No one else has physical access to your Vio.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, you can turn that off. You go into the user and account settings, and okay. And you can say. One thing Windows 8 does that's really nice is it lets you do a PIN. So that's kind of a middle ground between no password and the full password, a four-digit PIN. But unfortunately, 7 doesn't do that. I do turn that on 8, but on 7, just you could say there's a little checkbox when you go to user and accounts that say don't require login.
Oh.
And you can do that as long as you don't take it out of the house and no one else is going to sit down at it. That's fine.
And, you know, another thing here, you know, those keyboard
The
silicone.
Yeah. You know what? Every keyboard gets filthy.
Sure.
Because who can resist eating sandwiches while you're surfing the net? No one. Donuts, soup.
There you go.
Yeah. And do you wash your hands before you use a keyboard? No. So you could put a keyboard protector if you're particularly sloppy. The thing about keyboards, they're cheap. You can buy another one for $10. What I usually do, here, I think I recommend this.
Okay.
Unplug the keyboard periodically. Turn it upside down. Bang out the crumbs. I don't use a keyboard protector. Bang out the crumbs, and then I take a Clorox wipe or a Lysol wipe and just wipe the surface. That gets that kind of kills some of those germs. And kind of this, I'm showing, I know you can't see it because it's a radio, but I'm showing the microphone right now, my keyboard, which until recently was really scungili. It was really disgusting. But I just cleaned it with a Clorox. If it really is bad, you can, at the risk of losing your keyboard, put it in the dishwasher. Honest to gosh. But the key on that is don't have anything else in there. And I wouldn't – you could use detergent, I guess, maybe a little bit. And then make sure it's fully dried before you use it again. Okay. And then there's always a risk, you know, one time in five that you do that, that the keyboard will not come back to life. But they're cheap to replace. I would rather do that than have a big rubber thing on my keyboard, personally.
Hey, if I want to download my file from my old computer and dump it onto this one, what do I do? Just put a disk in there?
Well, there's a Microsoft way to do it. They have a file and settings transfer wizard, which you could use. I don't like to do that, but you can do that. Otherwise, here's what I would do. Get an external drive. It's good to have anyway as a backup.
I have that.
Yeah, copy your documents, my photos, all this my stuff onto that. And then copied on your new computer. Now you have three copies, the old computer, the drive, and the new one. And that's great. Now you have backups. So that's the safest way. The one other thing you might consider doing, and it's kind of a pain in the behind, but it's the safest thing you can do, is not run as administrator. Microsoft has this UAC system that's supposedly going to protect you, but doesn't. So the idea is when a bad guy gets on your system, you know, convinces you to click a link and download some malware, he has to run that malware or install that malware on your system. He has to have administrator permissions. If you're as logged in as administrator on your computer, then he can do it. He doesn't have to ask or anything. He just does it. If you're logged in as a limited user or a standard user, not as administrator, then he's going to have to ask for the administrative password. And that's the point where you have the opportunity, one last chance to say, whoa, wait a minute. So I always say, don't run as an administrator. Leo Laporte, the tech. The bump de bump is the chomp de chomp is the Scott Wilkinson. He's our own personal Santa year-round and our home theater guru, editor at aviasforum.com. He also does the fabulous Home Theater Geeks podcast on this little podcast network I've heard of called Twit, TWIT.TV. Scotty, how are you? Did you have a good holiday?
Had a great holiday, yeah. Loads of fun and... hung out with family and friends and
good.
Drank too much and ate too much, but what else is new?
What else is new? See any movies or?
No, you know, I had intended to go see The Hobbit in high frame rate and just didn't make it. There was just too much going on.
Yeah. You have to go to a special theater for that. You can't just wander in
off the street. But there are a lot more this year than the other previous two Hobbits, both of which were also shot and displayed sometimes in high frame rate. This third installment, so I've seen anyway, reports of it, there are a lot more theaters that are showing it in 48 frames per second rather than 24 as most other movies are, virtually all other movies.
I saw it in 3D and didn't seem very extremely 3D. There were only a few.
Well, that's what I've heard as well. And the only way you can see it in high frame rate is in 3D.
Yeah.
And IMAX is showing it in high frame rate 3D, which I
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought they couldn't do that.
No, they can do it. Okay. Absolutely. They've got the projectors.
Okay.
What they can't do is they can't do Dolby Atmos sound and high frame rate 3D in an IMAX theater because IMAX has their own sound system.
You said this last time you were on. How many different formats was The Hobbit released in? It was like...
Oh, six or seven at least. Yeah.
2D, 3D, IMAX, IMAX 3D, HFR 3D, and right. On and on and on.
Right, right, right.
So if you go to The Hobbit's website, they have a list of all the... 3D theaters. I guess I'm going to have to sit through some sort of strange flash thing first. Okay, there we go. And then they have a list of 3D theaters you can see it
right.
in. Yeah.
Right. You know, some people really like that high frame rate look. I do myself, but a lot of people don't. They say, it doesn't look like a movie. It doesn't look cinematic. It doesn't look filmic.
Did he did he shoot these all at once?
As far as I know,
he must
I think
have.
So.
You're not going to rebuild... the mountain and smog every time.
Right, you gotta, right.
So the technology then wouldn't be the state-of-the-art technology. It'd be whatever they had a few years ago when they were shooting.
Well, still, he's the only one other than James Cameron who is shooting the upcoming Avatars in high frame rate.
And I guess, truthfully, HFR isn't a... I mean, it's not like it's a technology. It's just you got to run the film faster through the camera.
Well, it's digital. It's all digital.
Oh, it's digital. Okay.
So, yeah, as long as you have the digital technology, you have the sensor and the memory and the electronics that can capture things that fast,
then
no problem. And then you need, of course, a projector that'll project it out that fast. But more and more projectors have that capability. So,
Would you rather see The Hobbit in Atmos with the sound coming from all around you or in IMAX with the big, big screen?
That is a very tough question. I spent a considerable amount of time trying to find them both, and it doesn't exist.
Right. So you have to choose.
So I have to choose. I myself, even though I'm a big Atmos fan, I love Atmos, I would prefer to probably go see it in high frame rate because that is a technology that is even more... It even more shakes up the industry.
Yeah.
Atmos shakes up the industry by extending the sound field into the third dimension, and it's wonderful. But the high frame rate, I think, is a real disruptive technology, and it's much more controversial.
So far, only the Hobbit trilogy is in HFR.
Correct.
But James Cameron has said he's going to start using 48 frame
or 60.
Or 60.
I don't think.
Ooh.
Could be 60.
Wow.
In any event, it's going to look much different than what we're used to for the last 100 years in movies. And some people really object to that.
Yeah, I remember when the first Hobbit came out, people, and we mentioned this, were complaining that you look at things like Gandalf's staff, and instead of it looking like a magical wizardry staff, it looks like something made out of resin that they bought at Staffs R Us or the Halloween shop. Because you're seeing, because it's more realistic looking. It's not, 24 frames kind of gave it a little more dreamy look.
Right, especially with anything in motion.
Yeah. And, can we do this on our home screens? We can't.
Well, yes, home screens do potentially have the technology because they are video screens, so they can show things at 60 frames per second, no problem. But there isn't any source material other than some broadcast TV, 720p channels like Fox, ABC, ESPN, they broadcast at 720p 60 frames, so you do see it on broadcast TV, but no Blu-ray. There's no Blu-ray with high frame rate. So you can't go out and buy The Hobbit on Blu-ray at high frame rate.
Oh, that's interesting.
Not yet, anyway.
Huh.
We'll see. Now, one thing we can look for in 2015 is a UHD 4K Blu-ray, which will have the ability to store and play at 48 frames or even 60 frames per second, I assume. Might even go up to 120. We don't even know yet. The spec isn't done.
So we're more than a year off.
1 year off. I think at Christmas time 2015, okay, we will see that product.
And will they be, they'll be expensive because they're
probably
the new thing?
Right. Yeah. And you know, any new technology is going to be expensive, yeah, at first, as you know.
Right.
So you need a new player, and you're going to need, and these discs will be different. So
if you have a Blu-ray player already and you have a nice 1080p HD screen, you might want to stick with what you've got now.
That's what I'm saying.
And think in a year from now, or maybe a little more, you're going to be able to buy a 4K set and a better Blu-ray player that can support 4K video and high frame rate,
right,
video and all of,
right,
that.
Right. And a year from now, you might very well get high dynamic range content.
What's that?
And, well, it's where the different dynamic range is the difference between the blackest black that can be represented and the whitest white.
Yes.
And at the moment, we have a certain standard for that. But in the future, probably next year, we may very well get what's called high dynamic range, which expands that difference. And that, to me, is a far more dramatic improvement in the picture quality over having just simply more pixels, as in 4K or UHD.
What was the big story of 2014 in home theater?
I think the big story in 2014 was Dolby Atmos coming home. It's been in the theaters for a couple of years, and as you mentioned earlier, it puts speakers overhead, and it gives you a truly three-dimensional sound field, which if the sound mixer and so on in the movie makes good use of it, really, really, really improves the sense of immersion. And you can now buy it for the home. It became available in June of 2014, and there are now receivers that have it. There are speakers that have it. The big deal is you need something, some sound source overhead. And a lot of people go, wait a minute, I'm not going to put speakers on my ceiling. I've already, you know, got the wife complaining about all the speakers around the sides. I'm going to put more in there? Well, Dolby came up with a really good solution to that, which is put a speaker on top of your normal speakers that shoot up to the ceiling and then reflect that sound back down into the listening area. It gives you much the same effect of having sound coming from above. And that's really cool when you've got scenes of rain, or you've got, my favorite example is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. You're walking through the forest, and these apes, these intelligent apes, are in the trees above you. And you can hear each individual ape making its sound above you. It's very cool.
I hear one right now saying it's time to take a break. Scott Wilkinson, AVSForum.com, and the Home Theater Geek Show on twit.tv. Have a great day. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now watch. I'm above you. I'm below you. I'm to the left.
Man.
I'm to the right. See? It works.
It works.
It works.
Works totally.
Atmos. All right, Scotty, take it away, Blue Jay.
Thank you so very much.
All yours.
Oh, I just got a good idea for brunch in Napa. Thank you, Talking One. I will definitely take that under advisement. No question about it. So yeah, I hope everybody had a good holiday, looking forward to the big New Year's Eve bash. Beatmaster, am I considering watching The Interview online or in theaters? You know, I am so not a Seth Rogen fan. You know, when this movie was first announced, I had zero interest in it. And now, of course, all the hoopla around it doesn't make me want to see it anymore. I mean, it's still the same movie. Kind of stupid, probably. I mean, if it's anything like Seth Rogen's stuff, usually is. In my opinion, it's only my opinion. People like him. A lot of people like him, and that's great. Fine with me. But I don't particularly like his stuff, so I don't think so. I don't think I'm going to go see it. Matt Waz bought the Pioneer Andrew Jones bookshelf speakers, and he loves them. Sound great. You can't beat the price. That's right. No question about that. Those are my picks for value speakers of the year. No question about it. So, yeah, anyway, here we are in lovely Napa. We're going to go just hang for a few days and go up to Petaluma and have a wonderful, relaxed time. Oh, yes, Sybil. I should wear my maroon shirt, white beard, and blue jeans, and then I could be look very patriotic while watching the interview. Yeah, but I'm not going to. I don't think I'm going to go see that movie. I was just trying to think, what was the movie that I most liked this year? That's a good question. I'll have to think about that. Effin' Dunn downloaded the interview from Google Play. It's a typical Rogan Franco movie. See? If you like that sort of thing, more power to you. Go for it.
Mike Elgin and Amira went. My son, I forgot to ask my son because he went to the theater. You can see it here in Petaluma.
Oh, yeah? In an independent theater? Smaller theater?
Nice big.
It's a regular?
Regular theater.
Oh, okay.
I forgot to ask Henry if he liked it, but you know who liked it, oddly enough? Mike Elgin's wife, Amira, loved it.
Really?
Yeah. Actually, Mike and Amira both thought it was very good. So it was better than, you know, and they both hated The End of the World.
I never saw that.
Oh, that was awful. I didn't even finish it. they both hated Pineapple Express.
Okay.
So it's apparently better than the other Rogan Franco collaborations.
Well, good. I hope people enjoy it.
I don't really. I feel like people are seeing it as a political act, which is bizarre.
Exactly. It's very weird. Very weird. I mean, it's going if this was North Korea, and I have no idea whether it was or not, it really backfired on them because it gave this movie so much more publicity than it would have gotten otherwise.
Yeah. They'll lose this much. They'll lose money on it. It's not going to.
Think so?
Yeah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Last two shows this weekend of the year 2014. So we've been taking a look back at some of the interesting stories of 2014. You heard Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, say the home theater story of the year was Atmos sound coming to the home. Yeah, man. I just got my 5.1 surround sound set up. Now I got to get more speakers. A new decoder? Just so I can hear monkeys come from a tree above me? I don't think so. Although, I have to admit, for the longest time, I was the guy who said stereo's just fine. Stereo was a big upgrade for me to watch TV in stereo, left and right channel. Wow. If the sound comes from two speakers, that was an upgrade for me. And then, for some reason, I'm not sure why, but last, maybe it was Christmas Eve. No, I guess it was Christmas Day. We were watching a movie on Google Play through the Chromecast. And there was something about it, for some reason, that it was left and right instead of using all five speakers. And it was hard to understand that, because on a five-speaker system, one of the best advantages is that the dialogue comes from a center channel all by itself. And you could turn that up if you want. And then, of course, you have the surround, which every time I use the surround, I feel like somebody's at the door or something. Like there's somebody in the house. Half the time I jump up and say, "What's that?" "Oh, it's the movie." "There's somebody behind me." "Oh, no, it's just the movie." So I'm not sure I want somebody above me. "There's somebody upstairs. And we only have one floor." I'm not sure I want that. But I have to say, having moved now to 5.1 or even 3.1, where you have left, right, center, and a subwoofer is a lot better than stereo. And Scott, for a long time, gave me a hard time on that. 8888, Ask Leo. If you like this kind of stuff, don't forget the Home Theater Geeks podcast, twit.tv/HTG. Jerry on the line from Altadena, California. Hi, Jerry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Good morning and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. So last April, I went to the Philippines for a couple of weeks, took my Note 2 with me. I was planning to buy a SIM, and they said, "Oh, your phone's not unlocked, so you can't do this." So I found lots of Wi-Fi places. Apparently, Manila is one of the most Wi-Fi-enabled cities around.
I think Wi-Fi is going to change the landscape everywhere in the world soon, like this year.
Yeah. So next week, in a little over a week, I'm going to England for 2 weeks. And I am off contract now as of last week.
Who's your carrier?
It's Verizon.
So you have to go to Verizon.
I'm no longer on contract.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. The locking of the phone is like a physical thing on the phone. You have to get the phone unlocked.
So I can do that and then buy a SIM.
Well, I don't know if you can do it. You have to take it to Verizon and beg. They're supposed to do it. AT&T will do it. After 6 months at AT&T, if your phone...
They'll unlock your phone for you.
Yeah.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I'd take it to Verizon first. It should, because the people in the mall will charge you. Verizon is supposed to do it for free for you once you've paid off your two-year obligation.
Oh.
So, now, what phone is it? This is also
Note 2.
Note 2, yeah. So this isn't going to solve your problem anyway. Is there even a SIM card in your Note 2?
Yes.
There is?
Yes.
Okay, so here's the issue. Verizon is a CDMA carrier, and that's not, they don't have that in England. They have GSM.
It's a dual phone. It has GSM.
Perfect. As long as it has GSM, it's a world phone. All right. Then you'll be able to put a GSM SIM in. But the SIM slot does have to be unlocked. Current Verizon phones, if you've got a Note 4 or an iPhone 6, Verizon is under a consent decree with the Federal Communications Commission not to lock the SIM card on those phones. So a current Verizon phone, like an iPhone 6, you can take to England, get a SIM card from 3 or EE or somebody and pop it in, and you'll have an English phone number and English data. And in fact, they have very affordable data plans there.
But
a Note 2 may be a little different because a Note 2, I bet that SIM card is just a GSM card. It's not an LTE card. So,
right.
Yeah, so it's just for voice. And so you'll still have to unlock it and get a GSM card in there.
And then when I go back to the Philippines later in a few months, then I can do another SIM card there.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Sounds good.
So the Note 2 probably still has to be unlocked. It is, Scooter X in our chat room saying it is LTE capable. That's good. I'm sure it's not voice over LTE. It's a shame. This is getting much less, it's a shame it's so complicated. It's getting much less complicated. Everybody, all four major carriers in the U.S. is moving to, everybody in the world is moving to LTE. And that will be for both voice and data. And once that happens, once you have a phone that does voice and data over LTE, things will be much, much simpler. Much, much simpler. But for now, yeah, get that phone unlocked. Bring it to Verizon. They're supposed to do it for free. But Verizon is supposed to do a lot of things it doesn't do. Verizon's kind of notorious for ignoring federal requirements. But if you can get them to unlock it, then you should be able to put a SIM card in from any country. Now, you'll lose your Verizon number. You'll have a local number now. That's why often what we do is instead of getting a new SIM card as we travel, we will either go to Verizon or whoever and pay for international data. Verizon's fairly expensive. You've got to do that. You don't want to do roaming. International data roaming can cost you thousands. So always either arrange for international data, put a different SIM card in, or turn off data roaming. In fact, that should be your default. Turn off data roaming. Because you don't want to. And even if you say, well, I'm never going to use data, you always are losing data. Your phone was always checking mail and Twitter and whatever, Facebook, and it's always using data for that. The other option is to get, and this is what we did when we were in England a couple of months ago. We got an EE MiFi card. It's a little credit card-sized Wi-Fi adapter that uses data from the 3G or 4G network and turns it into Wi-Fi, and then you lock your phone into that Wi-Fi. You turn off data roaming, lock your phone into the Wi-Fi, and you're using... You still have your phone number. That's not changed. You're still using a U.S. phone number. But the data is Wi-Fi data as you travel around. That worked quite well. It was fast and affordable. Cordell is in Asheville, North Carolina, our next caller. Hi, Cordell.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. So give you the story of what I'm doing here. I have a 500 gigabyte hard drive in my computer currently. I have 2 1-terabyte hard drives that I want to put in there as a RAID 1 array so that they're redundant. And then what I'd like to do is completely copy the 500 gigabyte hard drive onto the RAID array so that it's like nothing ever happened. So that I can just boot up
yeah.
the RAID array and then that's it.
You want to clone it so it's bootable and everything.
Yeah, so that's what I'm looking for is a bootable disk clone software that I can get for free because I'm cheap.
Free because you're cheap. And you're going to keep all three drives in there initially, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because that's how you'll have to clone it. You'll have to continue to be booting. This is going to be a little tricky because of the RAID 1, but you're going to continue to boot from the old drive, but then run CloneZilla or something like it. And by the way, that's the only free one I know of, CloneZilla. And what it does is you're going to make a bootable Linux disk with CloneZilla on it, and then you're going to say clone drive A to the RAID array, which you'll have to set up ahead of time, in B, and that'll work. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. But what other free choices are there? Chat room will give me many that we can then put in the show notes. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and smartphones and home theater, digital photography, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo is my phone number. The website is techguylabs.com. And regarding the last call of the previous hour, we'll put a number of cloning solutions on the website there, because I only mentioned the one, the free one, CloneZilla. There's another one called Reflect from Macrium that is also free for home use only. Some of the chat room really likes. There are a few other choices. Free is a fairly limited choice when it comes to cloning hard drives, but I think a good idea to have a cloning program of some kind. Disk imager is another, drive imager rather. There's another one. Acronis True Image is kind of pricey, but these are very useful ways to make backups of your hard drive, bit for bit, sector for sector. These are the last two shows of 2014, and as usual on this show, today's show, I like to look back at the year. Tomorrow, we'll look ahead to 2014, but I would say this was the year, really, there are many stories that are probably big stories in 2014, but I would say the biggest story, technology kind of story of the year is really the coming of age of smartphones. I think this was the year that everybody was able to make a smartphone that finally could take the place of your, not only of your tablet, but of your computer. A phone that you could put in your pocket or your purse, carry with you at all times. It was always connected to the internet. That had a good screen and powerful processors. And it was able to not only just play great games, but also surf the internet effectively, answer email, voice dictation, and so forth. And there were some really great phones this year. So many that it was, I think, hard to choose the best. We chose the best on our podcast network, and I'll tell you what we chose in a little bit and why. But the year began, I think really in some ways, the year began with the widespread availability of the last iPhone, the 5S. I gave my daughter a 5C for Christmas last year. That was the colorful one. The 5S was the first iPhone to feature a fingerprint reader, the Touch ID. And that came of age this year with the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus and Apple Pay. The ability, only last month did this come along, to pay for stuff by tapping your phone on a terminal and touching the Touch ID with your finger to prove your identity. And that is a really revolutionary technology. And it's going to really, I think, jumpstart touch to pay for every phone user. Also early this year in 2014, the Galaxy S5 from Samsung, a phone I didn't particularly embrace because it had a lot of the Samsung junk on it. And it wasn't much better than the Galaxy S4. It didn't wow me. I had an S4, and I kept my S4. Didn't run out and get an S5. However, I did go crazy for the HTC One, the M8, the successor to the 2013 HTC One, that was better in many significant ways and just a gorgeous phone, and a phone many agree as well-designed or maybe even in some cases better designed than an iPhone. Just a gorgeous piece of hardware running state-of-the-art Android KitKat. This was the phone, in many respects, the phone of the year, the HTC One. Beautiful phone. Later in the year, HTC even made it available running the Windows Phone operating system, which is a very good choice for Windows Phone users. I also like the Nokia 1520. This was a 6-inch Windows phone, had a great camera, beautiful screen, and the size, this first 6-inch phone I'd used, and for a long time, I think many of us thought these giant phones are crazy looking. You look silly holding them. I think we've all gotten used to it now. And if it is to be your kind of primary computer, having a big screen makes a difference. The Galaxy Note 4 came out later this year and has been a huge success following on the building on the success of the Note 1, the Note 2, and the Note 3. These have been very successful phones. And even Apple had to sit up, take notice, and release a giant phone, a 5.5-inch iPhone 6 Plus. Other great phones, well, the phone that was hard to get, but I think in many respects was very exciting, was the OnePlus One. This was a 5.5-inch screen. In fact, the same part as the iPhone 6 Plus, with a big battery, best battery life of the year, in my opinion. 20-hour battery, easy for me, using it all day. And a price that was unbelievable for the 32-gig version, $300, $350 for the 64-gig version. So for the quality of the screen, the battery life, it was running an unusual version of Android based on CyanogenMod, which has been in the past kind of a hackery version of Android, but in this case had every feature you'd want without bogging the system down, including raw camera imaging. I think the OnePlus One we ended up picking as our phone of the year, given the price and the performance. The only downside was Apple had eaten up all of the parts for its iPhones, and so it was very difficult to get a OnePlus One. You had to enter a lottery or play some contests and get somebody to invite you. So it wasn't widely available, but you can't blame OnePlus for that, the company that made it, because they were in an environment where they were the little guy, and the big guy, the 600-pound gorilla in the space, was eating up all the screens. As we found out later, that's why you couldn't get a OnePlus, because all of the 5.5-inch screens were going to Apple for its 6 Plus. So, I ended up at the end of the year with the Nexus 6, which is Google's pure Android version. Lollipop 5, the latest version of Android, is spectacular, Android 5.0. And the Nexus 6 is a pure Lollipop experience with a nearly 6-inch screen, pretty good camera. So I've been very happy with that. That's the phone I've ended up with, kind of alternating it with the Note 4. For dollar, the Note 4 is pretty amazing. With a fingerprint reader, it's the only Android phone, commonly used Android phone with a fingerprint reader. Not as good as Apple's, but okay. What other one has a fingerprint reader? So does the Sony? No. I think the only one is the... it also has a heart rate monitor on the back of the phone. Really good camera. It's probably the best Android camera. 16-megapixel shooter on the Note 4. It has a stylus. It has multiple windows. So the Note 4, as usual, also has a lot of Samsung cruft on it, and it is not going to be Android 5 for a while because of it. But it's pretty nice. Oh, yeah, the Galaxy S5 had a fingerprint reader. Same fingerprint reader. That's right. People still love, it's funny, even though the Nexus 6 is out, the Nexus 5 is, Google continues to sell it, although there's some question of whether they'll sell it into the new year. That's still very, very popular. Very, very popular with the Android purists. And, of course, you can't ignore the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus. Big bestseller and very popular. And I'll tell you what, I asked my son, my 20-year-old son, I said, does anybody in your crowd use anything other than the iPhone? He says, there's one guy, we think of him as a weirdo. Everybody's using an iPhone. And I think among kind of less sophisticated, not geeky, normal people, the iPhone is still a clear winner. Just a beautiful phone. I actually prefer the littler one. As much as I love big phones, and I have a Note 4 and a Nexus 6, which are giant screens, the 1520 with a giant screen, but I prefer the iPhone 6. It's just elegant and gorgeous. So a great year. I mean, I think this is the bottom line of that, is you have your choice. You could pick your carrier first, decide on which operating system you prefer, iOS, Android, or Windows Phone, or BlackBerry. I shouldn't ignore there were two big BlackBerry releases this year. Nobody bought them, but there were two big releases. You could choose your operating system, and then you had some good choices, even among the Android group. There's just some really excellent choices. HTC One Max had a fingerprint reader, I'm told. Okay. This was a good year for smartphones, and I think it is the beginning of the... I hate to say it, because I'm an iPad lover, and I love my Nexus 7 tablet, but I think it's the beginning of the end for tablets. I think phones now have reached maturity point where they're fast, they're big enough, and they're very usable. I find I very rarely go to my iPad anymore because I've got a big phone, and it gives me enough real estate. It's not as big, but it's enough. Oh, I left out the Moto. My favorite phone of 2013 with a Moto X. The successor to the Moto X for 2014 was also gorgeous. The leather back, dual speakers on the front, lovely screen. Disappointing camera and battery life, though, kept it out of the running. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Still in love with my Nokia 100. Now, that's a phone. Somebody brought me this for this year. This is, I would guess, from the 80s. It is a brick. It's heavy. But it has an antenna that extends. You know, nobody does that anymore, the extending antenna. And experts all agree that no antenna is going to be as good as an extending antenna. So there you go. Great signal. Battery life. This thing has a... We don't rate this battery in milliamp hours. We rate it in kilograms. It's like a 3-pound battery. But it will last a long, long time. Texting's not as easy, but it's doable.
What era is this from?
I think it's 80s. I don't know. You feel like Michael Douglas should be carrying this.
People in the 80s were extremely fit, having to lift
yes,
the phone to their ear all
they
the time.
They are. Let's see. 800 milliamp hour NiCad battery guaranteed you 95 minutes talk time, 22 hours standby. And we complain.
Yeah.
We complain about our phones today. You couldn't fit this in a pocket. You need more like a pouch for this. This is great, though. And it came with all the accessories. There's the charger. That's it. That's all the accessories. Never been used. You can see there's still plastic over the screen there.
Wow.
Yeah. I should charge it up. Wonder if it'd work.
I know. I want
to
use it.
It'd be so wonderful to just, you know, you're at a theater or whatever. You pull out your cell phone and it's this giant brick thing. Not even a flip phone. This predates the flip phones. This thing is...
I can't talk. Greece is about to start.
Yeah. The funny thing is, okay, the chat room has looked it up. This is 1993. You feel like this must be from the 50s. But no, it's 1993. It's not even that old. 20 years old. The cell phone of the decade. I'm going to charge it up and see if I can get on a network. No, in fact, I know you can't because they got rid of the analog networks that these phones used.
Shoot.
Yeah.
You can pretend.
Bummer, man.
Put on some acid wash jeans and you're unbelievable and go to the grocery store with that and go, honey, did you want me to pick up any pickles or bread?
8888-ASK-LEO. If you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, no, I will not help you with your Nokia 100 brick phone. I don't have any answers for that at all. Let's go to Brant in Watertown, South Dakota. Hello, Brant. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
How are you?
Pretty good. Say, I've had a Nexus 7 for about 2 years, and it quit last week.
It died!
Yeah.
Oh.
So I'm looking for a replacement. I'm trying to decide between the Nexus 9 and the NVIDIA Shield.
Get the Shield, no questions asked.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
NVIDIA Shield is an amazing... I think it's a little less expensive, isn't it, than the 9?
Yeah.
Both run the NVIDIA Tegra K1 processor. Both are 64 bits, I think. I know the 9 is. I presume the Shield is. The Shield is so fast. Such a nice tablet. Everybody seems to like it. It's particularly good for gaming. Do you game?
A little bit.
Yeah. That's. I would say the Nexus 9, which is manufactured by HTC, is not exactly great. Now, one advantage is it's going to be Lollipop, Android 5. And it's okay. And just like the Nexus 7, I am holding my Nexus 7 right now, and it got Lollipop. You're going to always be among the first to get the updates. But those I know who have the Shield are very happy with it. I would say that's probably the Android tablet of the year is the NVIDIA Shield.
Okay. All right.
All right. And it's less expensive. Why not? Google, I think, stumbled a little bit with the 9. They've done such great processors and such great laptops, I should say. But, third time. Such great tablets. I think the Nexus 7 is a classic. But I think they stumbled a little bit on the Nexus 9. Anybody disagree? I'd love to hear from you. If you have a Nexus 9 and you think there's reasons why you should look at that instead of the NVIDIA Shield, let's hear it. Because truthfully, I don't own either. So it's this is based on others talking about it and so forth. Marilyn in Dana Point, California. Hi, Marilyn. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. Well, thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling.
We have a Mac laptop. It's about 4 years old.
Okay.
And we have the two different sites on it, one for my husband, one for me. And he downloaded the Yosemite. And now I have all sorts of trouble on my side. I can't.
Well, you only get one version on the. So you're Yosemite 2 now, I would guess.
Yes.
Yes. You know, once you install Yosemite on one login, all of them get it. Thank you very much. What kind of problems are you having?
I can't open my documents in Numbers or Pages. It's that I need the newer version of Numbers before I can open.
Yeah. So open the App Store, and it'll have an update for you on all of those.
Well, we tried that, but...
But what happened?
I have to buy a new one. No. Yeah, we tried updating, but it doesn't do anything. It won't update.
It won't update. And are you an administrator as well as your husband on both? You got to be
I'm the actual administrator.
You're the administrator. Okay.
Yes.
So do it on your account.
Well, the thing is, though, when we go to the App Store on my side, his email comes up for the App Store.
That's okay.
That's okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That shouldn't matter. You definitely want to update. I'm not sure why it's not updating. I've had that problem, too, occasionally, where the updates just, you press the update all button and nothing happens.
Yeah, I just, yeah.
Yeah. That means that the one on top cannot complete or isn't completing. So, by the way, you may already have the new version of iWork. Aaron Hillel in the chat room is saying that it does not update the old version of iWork. It just puts another one on there. So make sure you're using the most recent one. You may actually have two copies of Numbers on your hard drive. So make sure that you open the right one.
How would we know which?
Go into the application folder and look for the iWork folder and see if you have two. You might have an iWork with a 2009 folder or 2010 folder. And you want to delete the old one or at least move it out of the applications folder.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, the other thing you can do is just, in fact, I would move, if anything that says iWork in there, move it out and go back to the App Store and download the versions. You won't have to pay anything. They're free. And get the latest version. And then that way you know you've got the latest there.
Okay.
Yeah, Apple's kind of messed around with iWork in ways that I'm not thrilled about. They updated it, but their update took out many features. That's not an update. That's a backwards date. That's a down date. That's a date you don't want to go on. And they're slowly adding those features back. So I'm not thrilled about that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm so tempted to charge this, but I know it. Unless somebody, you think maybe people are keeping legacy analog networks around? Our show today brought to you by Gazelle. This is a great time for Gazelle to advertise because, face it, we didn't all of us get the thing we wanted for the holidays. Maybe you decided that what you got wasn't the right thing. Now's the time to go to gazelle.com to trade in your old gadgets and buy your new gadgets. GAZELLE.com. Sell your old phones, your old electronics. They'll buy your Samsung Galaxy phones, iPads, MacBooks, old iPhones. Trading in old devices after you get the new ones for the holidays, like getting a second gift. And then now, this is new, they've added a little Gazelle store where you can buy certified pre-owned devices. And they have two different conditions available. Like new, certified like new, which is like new, and certified good, which, you know, these are so some gentle signs of wear, but will save you even more money. And if you've, for instance, lost or broken a phone, replacing it with a certified good device is going to give you a working device. They've all been through the very rigorous 30-point inspection to make sure they're fully functional. And they're all backed by a 30-day risk-free return policy. But so you can get an iPhone 5 for $239 or an iPad mini with Retina display for $249. Visit gazelle.com. Sell your old stuff, especially if you got new stuff for the holidays. And if you didn't get what you wanted, you can buy some certified pre-owned stuff for a very, very good price. Gazelle. Free shipping. Most items qualify for the free box. And fast processing. They'll even wipe your data when you sell a phone to them or a tablet or a computer. And if you forget to wipe it or you can't. Because, you know, they will buy broken iPhones and iPads, too. So you can't wipe the data. Don't worry. They'll take care of that for you. Gazelle's paid out nearly $175 million to over 1 million customers. Some very happy people. I've been using Gazelle for years. And now you can also buy certified, pre-owned, high-quality goods at Gazelle. Gazelle.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the number, 888-827-5536. Toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Our website is techguylabs.com. You'll find everything we talk about there, links to all the articles I mentioned or software I mentioned, but you'll also get a link to our chat room if you'd like to join them. Always fun in there. And you can comment as well if you've got a suggestion. If you hear me answer a question, you say, you know, there's a better way, Leo. That's the place to do it. TechGuyLabs.com. Our next caller, Roger, Pasadena, California. Hi, Roger.
Hey, Leo. How are you? Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Hey, I've got a 20-inch Dell monitor, LCD monitor, that's mm-hmm. been just chugging along for years and years and years. And in the last few weeks, whenever I, whether either sleeps or I turn it off and then turn it back on, it starts flashing like the frame rate is completely gone berserk.
Hmm. Does it settle down after a while?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it'll do that for maybe a minute, and then it settles down, and then it works like a champ until I either turn it off or it goes to sleep again.
Have you tried a different cable by any chance? Or is the cable wired into the back of the monitor?
No, it's just a regular digital.
Sometimes it's just the cable. That would be the easy fix if it's a mm-hmm. burnout cable. I think it's much more likely that it is an aging monitor. And it sounds like either the transformer or the power supply is not. If a power supply has gone bad, that's exactly what you'd expect. It would have to kind of warm up.
And I have kind of a related question.
It's an LCD panel? Or is it a glass screen?
No, I think it's an LCD.
It's flat, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I've also been having trouble with the display driver crashing occasionally, and I wonder if the monitor is going bad, if that could affect the video
card. No, there's no feedback to this the display video card if the monitor is going bad.
Okay.
I would guess that the first thing to do is just make sure that this isn't a driver issue. It's not a software issue. So make sure you get the updated software on that thing.
Yeah. Well, it updates itself, so.
Yeah, presumably it is up to date.
Yeah.
Windows XP?
Windows 7.
7, oh, good. All right.
Yeah. Okay, so it sounds like I may have to go shopping for a monitor.
You know, they're so cheap now, and you can go to Dell and get a 27-inch for $300, and it would be so much bigger and better and nicer.
Yeah.
It's probably a good Christmas gift to yourself.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
The voltage could be bad in the transformer. People, you know, it's funny, whenever there's a hardware issue, there's always somebody in the chat room who's going to say, oh, it's bad capacitors. And there was a period of time when these capacitors were leaky and bad. And it could be a bad capacitor. Certainly that could be, you know, if the capacitor has to warm up before it really holds the charge, that could be it. There's a lot of things it could be. It could easily be the transformer as well. So these are the kinds of things. Really, it's not worth fixing. If you can get a $300 27-inch monitor from Dell, there's no way you could fix this for less than $300. It's time to get a new one. which is a shame because that's a bunch of waste that's going to go in the landfill. You know, I would try another cable and another computer and then just to see if it's the driver or the cable. You know, swapping out pieces of the chain is often the best way to troubleshoot. But I have a feeling it's the monitor. That sounds consistent with an aging monitor, frankly. Joey, Long Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Joey. Oh, did I push a button? There I go. Hi, Joey.
Hey. Yeah, you know, actually, I had a similar problem with the last guy, and I found that the driver updates weren't very good, and I went to the native program, you know, the native companies like AMD, and
right.
got driver updates, and then just cleaned everything up.
That's often the case. In most cases, certainly with NVIDIA, you know, NVIDIA doesn't make the hardware. Some other company takes NVIDIA's designs and makes them. But NVIDIA does make a reference driver, so there's usually three places you can get a driver, for instance, for an NVIDIA card. One is from NVIDIA, get the reference driver. That's the driver they create so that the company like ASUS that makes the video card can take and make their own branded ASUS driver. That would be the second place. And then often Microsoft has a third driver that's Windows Hardware Quality Lab certified, WHQL certified. That driver may not be the most recent, but might be the most stable. So it's, yeah, if you have video driver issues, it's always a good idea to try the manufacturer, the foundry, like NVIDIA or AMD, the manufacturer of the card, and then finally the hardware from the Microsoft.
Well, I found I was missing codec, even though I had the drivers, yeah. I was missing the codec.
It's not unusual. That's another issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, this is these things, if you think about it, there is nothing more complex in your life than your personal computer.
Well, or my wife, you know.
Or your wife.
Yeah.
Guys are easy. We have on-off switches.
Okay, I got a couple of really quick comments, and then I'll get into the meat of my issues.
Yes, indeed.
One, Motorola, somewhere in, I think, the 80s, made a brick phone, a flip phone. The phone was about 3/8 of an inch thin, you know, the size of a regular flip phone, but the battery was about, you know, 1 3/4 inches.
I remember that. Stuck out, yeah.
Yeah, it was a big...
I had that one. You know, we interviewed the guy at Motorola who invented the portable cell phone. There had been car phones before, but he was the guy who invented the phone you carry around, Martin Cooper.
In a suitcase.
Yeah. And really an interesting fellow. And Motorola for a long time dominated the market because they invented it. Others came along and beat them to it. But they've had a resurgence. Once Google bought them, I think they started doing really great stuff again.
In WW2, all the walkie-talkies were Motorola.
Yeah, you bet.
Field.
Remember, and then the NFL until this year, all the headsets were Motorola. Then Bose got the deal.
Well, jumping to Bose, which segues me into the next spot. I'm not a tech guy at all. I'm like, but I'm real artsy. I've talked to you before. If you turn your home speakers up to the ceiling to reflect off your ceiling,
yeah.
Instead of putting your speakers up on the ceiling,
yeah.
You're going to get a few millisecond delay and reverberation out of it.
And will that be good or bad?
It depends on the room because, you know, the taller the ceilings, the longer the delay.
Yeah.
And it may add a really soft texture. You know, in other words, instead of having a sound and, like, chopped at the end, it'll have a, you know, a
little sustain. You'll have a little sustain on it, yeah.
But, it depends on a lot of things such as...
So do you have your speakers lying on their backs in your...
No. I personally like stereo. But what I've done is I've run 4 speakers... in the front, and I have, and they're handling different ranges because.
I got to tell you what I have my nice, lovely speakers. I have Aperions, which I really like, and Emotivas, which I really like, and I have 2 different surround systems. And surround is great, but it's a little weird to have sounds coming from places not in front of you. And I always think somebody's sneaking up on me.
That's exactly so. Someone's coming in the back door.
I don't like it. Anyway, especially if you're watching a spook show. You're
right.
Watching a scary movie, and you hear click steps behind you. That is not good.
Okay, now, for my meat of my question. I've had a lot of problems this year in the computer. I managed to cripple my way through repairing them myself. But I got in one of them I have a 1 terabyte drive and a 500 gigabyte drive, and then I have a 4 terabyte outboard drive. And 3 different computer units. Now, what I want to do, if I can, I want to be able to put a system on the terabyte drive or just use the computers themselves, but have two different systems running simultaneously that I can toggle between.
On a single keyboard, mouse, and monitor?
No, I can have separate.
But you want to have them using the same hard drive? I'll have to think about that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think what you want there is a network-attached storage.
No!
A NAS?
No!
Okay. Maybe what you want to do is put your speakers on their backs.
No!
We have quite a museum here at the Tech Eye Labs. For many years, I did encourage people to send us their old stuff. Stop. We've run out of space. So much so that I have Amigas in the basement, Ataris in the basement. But somebody was behind me in the studio. I have a little museum of old tech. We have the first netbook, the first iPod, the first iPhone, the first Android phone. And this is the Atari ET game. And somebody was asking me, is there a cartridge in there? Is that just the box? No, not only is there, I'm pretty sure there's a cartridge because it's sealed in the box. It's never been opened. That was a big story this year. In fact, they made a documentary out of it. There had always been, and I remember this, there was always the story going around that when this game came out, this was kind of as low as it got. This was the bottom of the barrel for the Atari 2600. Remember, the 2600 was wildly popular game machine in the 70s. I loved it. I was a fan. Was it late 70s, early 80s? Can't remember the exact year. This box is copyright 1982. This was when it all crashed. The movie E.T. came out that year, you may remember. And Atari decided to make a video game to tie in with the movie's release, but they only had 3 months to do it. And they made what many agree is the worst video game of all time. Such a bad game with so many bugs that they realized this was actually hurting sales of the Atari 2600 game system. And in fact, that's really the lesson of this game system was, and Nintendo learned this lesson very well when they came along some years later. This caused a crash in the video game economy. People stopped buying video games for a while because this was so horrible. And Nintendo, when they came back a few years later with the Nintendo Entertainment System, they said, we're going to make sure that only games we approve are released on the platform. But Atari they didn't let any piece of junk come out on this thing. And as a result, people just stopped buying the 2600. This one was so bad, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, that Atari collected all the unsold copies, even bought a few back from stores. And the rumor was brought them to a landfill and bulldozed them under, along with a bunch of other stuff they couldn't sell. But it was always a rumor until a couple of documentarians came along this year in 2014 and got permission to dig up a landfill in Alamogordo, New Mexico. And lo and behold, there they were, thousands of crushed Atari ET cartridges. Unsold. It was a true story. They made a little documentary about it, too. Of course, it hasn't eliminated bad video games. Goodness knows. But it was a cautionary tale that Nintendo learned a good lesson from. Don't allow bad games on your platform. It could hurt the platform. Now, people cherish this. I probably could sell this for hundreds of dollars. It's sealed in the box, never been used, Atari ET game cartridge. I think maybe even the basement we have a 2600 somewhere I could plug this into. I know we have an Atari 800. They found a Centipede games. I don't know what else they found. There was a lot of stuff in there. Bulldozed. In fact, I interviewed somebody just the other day, Ben Heck, who does a great series on YouTube about kind of, you know, electronics building and making. He bought, I think, a couple of the crushed ET cartridges from the landfill and was able to get one of them working again. With a little ingenuity. I wish Ben had called me. I could have given him one sealed in the box. Joey on the line from Long Beach, California. Hi, Joey. Leo. Oh, did I lose him? I did. It's not Joey. It's Neil in Colorado Springs. Hi, Neil.
call you, Leon. I wish I heard you earlier. I just finished destroying a Gigaset tablet, 8-inch tablet. I took a hammer to it this morning.
That's generally not the approved repair procedure, to take a hammer to a tablet.
Well, I did, because I got a message from the FBI, and for the last 2 days I was going crazy thinking they were going to get me. You know, and then they said, you got to send money in. Now, yeah. Have you heard of this? Is this for real, or is it a...
Now, wait a minute. Now, let's just examine this with our critical thinking powers. Turn on your brain here, Neil. The FBI popped up something on your laptop that said, "This is the FBI. We see that you are engaged in distributing child pornography." That's what it says in most cases. "But for $300, we're going to let you off the hook. So go down to your 7-Eleven and buy some money pack coupons and send them to this address, and we won't prosecute." Does that sound like something the FBI would do? It's not. It's a blackmail scheme. Not even a very good one, because you can safely ignore it. It's malware causes this. Actually, it doesn't have to be caused by malware, but in most cases it is. Bad stuff that's on your system. It could be just, you go to a website and there's a pop-up. It could just be that. If you would like to remove it, there are some ways to do that. Generally speaking, when somebody gets malware on their system, my strong advice is to wipe the system, not hit it with a hammer. I hope you didn't really hit it with a hammer, but to wipe the system and reinstall from a known good copy of Windows, your Windows install disk or your system recovery disks. That way, if something else snuck on there along with that little blackmail message, you could be sure it was gone. It's easy to remove the blackmail message. If you search on Google, there's lots of ways to do that. But that doesn't mean you've fixed everything. That's just the one you saw. And generally speaking, if somebody gets access to your system, it's a good idea to wipe the system and reinstall. And I'm sorry if you really did hit it with a hammer, Neil. Not necessary. The FBI, to my knowledge, and I'm pretty sure my facts on this, does not offer to let you off the hook if you send them anonymous payments via 7-Eleven. I don't believe they operate that way. That would be something new and different. Now, if you did hit with a hammer, I hope you have a good backup. Thomas in North Hills has a 1+1, but it's not behaving. Hi, Thomas.
Hey, how are you, Leo?
I'm well. I'm sorry to hear about your 1+1.
Yeah, your favorite phone of the year is giving me trouble.
You know, I have to say, and probably we should add this caveat, while it is my favorite phone, especially because of the price, support from the company OnePlus has not been very good. Have you tried to contact them?
I have read online other people trying to contact them. They say it's pretty much impossible.
Yeah. They're a Chinese company, and they don't seem to have tech support anywhere outside of China.
Yeah.
So it is. I have heard many people who have the spontaneous reboot problem.
Yes.
This happens to any Android phone if something's gone wrong with the operating system, the firmware. So what you need to do is you need to kind of replace the firmware. We got to take a break. Stand by. Okay. When we come back, I'll give you some suggestions. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, everybody. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, and all that jazz. Actually, I have a question from the previous caller to answer, and we're still talking right now to Thomas. He's in North Hills. His OnePlus keeps rebooting. Now, let me ask you a little bit about this rebooting, because there's a couple of different things that can happen. Are you saying that you're in the middle of something and it just turns itself all the way off, and you see the boot up logo for Cyanogen, and
it yeah. So sometimes it's just when I pick up the phone and try to do something, it's been idle for a while. Sometimes it's also been when I drive to work, I look over on the car seat and
yeah.
You know, out of nowhere.
Yeah. It could be a hardware issue, and if it is a hardware issue, then yeah, good luck.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you've been to the OnePlus forums, I hope, because there's quite a bit of conversation on the forums there for the OnePlus One about this. A couple of odd things. Some people say if you turn off NFC, it stops doing it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So just try that. Some people have had, and this all kind of leads to maybe radio issues, that the problem is related to Wi-Fi. And now, if it happens in the car, when you're not on Wi-Fi, then that's probably not the issue.
Okay.
So, and the fix for that, by the way, is not really tenable, which is to turn off Wi-Fi. Obviously, that's not going to be a long-term solution. But do try turning off NFC.
For example, the app Viber would not install at all.
Right.
And WhatsApp says, oh, this is Cyanogen custom mod. We don't guarantee it works.
Right.
Try to get rid of those two apps.
Right. But yeah. It could be that, exactly. So it's good to see if there's a particular app that causes problems. Some people say the theme, there are some Cyanogen mod themes, if you're using their theming store, that can cause problems. You've probably tried a factory reset, right? That's always the first thing to try.
I did. I went back to factory reset and then loaded one app at a time. And when I found out this app crashes, I took that off. It was good for a little while, but then it started doing it again.
Okay.
I didn't really solve it that way either.
Yeah. And then finally, you can go to xdadevelopers.com. This is the place for Android folks. They have a OnePlus One section there, and they have alternative firmware updates and downgrades that you could try, because it could just be that there's a firmware issue. All of this is trying to fix software problems. But again, if it's a hardware issue, none of this will work.
Yeah.
And so then you have to say, oh, good luck. I'm going to contact OnePlus and hope I can get a replacement. And really, I should downgrade my selection for that reason. And it frankly is the case with many cell phone companies. It's if you didn't buy it from a carrier, you know, AT&T or Verizon or Sprint or T-Mobile, then you're not going
to
get much.
Yeah,
you have nowhere to go. You're not going to get much satisfaction from the actual manufacturers. And I think that's the case for many phones. So that's the reason I didn't really downgrade the OnePlus. No one sells it as a subsidized phone. No carrier sells it. You have to buy it from the company, OnePlus, and then put a SIM in from T-Mobile or AT&T. And I feel like, you know, that's maybe one of the reasons why the price is important, because it's even if you had to buy another one, it's still less than buying a comparable high-end smartphone from Galaxy, Samsung, or something like that. It is a little unfortunate. And I think what really is the case is that most cell phone manufacturers consider their products disposables, with the exception of Apple. Maybe that's the one strong reason for getting an iPhone is that not only do you have the carrier to fall back on, but you also have Apple to fall back on. And Apple absolutely stands behind their hardware. If this were an iPhone that were randomly rebooting, there'd be no question. You just bring it to Apple and they give you a new one. Be easy. I prefer Android phones. I feel like Apple's a little behind with iOS. But that's a very strong argument to get an iPhone. Just support. Can't ignore that. Joey, Long Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Joey. You were talking. I wanted to get back to you. We were talking with you. You have a single hard drive.
Well, I have individual computers with some pretty big drives, but what I wanted, I got a 4 terabyte external drive, and what I want to do is be able to, because I used to do this on my Macs, I had, on two different drives I had set up. I want to be able to be in one drive and toggle to a different drive, and actually have off one.
I'm a little confused. So you want to boot off different drives? You want access data on different drives?
I want to be able to run. Well, like let's say for example, I do a lot of 3D gaming, so I want to be able to say run two different games on the two different drives and go back and forth. simultaneously.
Well, you, and no, any given drive can only be connected to one computer at a time via USB. You can unplug it and plug it into a different computer, wait for it to mount, and then play a game off of it. But you can't have them. There's not two plugs you can plug in.
No, what I mean is like if I, let's say I installed an OS on the Seagate.
Yeah.
And then I installed, let's say I installed Windows 7, two Windows 7s in two different sectors. Is there a way I can go between
them? That's the question then. So you have multiple operating systems and you want to choose on, when you first turn on a machine, which operating system to load. You need something called a bootloader. On a Macintosh, exactly right. You hold down the option key and it will scan all the drives available and show you all the different available operating systems and say, which one would you like to boot from today? And that's how you boot Windows on a Mac, for instance. To do that on Windows requires a third-party operating system and also some skills. For instance, let's say you've got an internal drive on a Windows 8 machine and you say, I would like to be able to boot Windows 7. So you have a second drive in that machine, you install Windows 7. Windows 7's installer is going to take over that machine. You'll never see Windows 8 again. So because Windows 7 doesn't know about Windows 8. If you did it in the opposite direction, if you had Windows 7 installed and you tried to install Windows 8 on a second disk, Windows 8 would say, oh, I see you have Windows 7. Would you like me to keep it and set up a dual boot system? It would do it automatically. So that if you have the luxury of building this system from scratch, start with the oldest operating system first and move up through time. Each newer operating system knows about the older one. It's only when you go backwards that you cause problems. If you have already done this or you don't have the luxury of reinstalling, then you need a bootloader. And we've talked about various bootloaders before. I've recommended in the past one that's pretty old now called GAG. It's on SourceForge. It's open source and free. So it goes on your master boot record of your boot drive. You know, there's always one drive that's drive zero on a Windows machine that's the boot drive. That master boot record has to hold the boot manager. It will then do... it will then do what the Mac does and scan and say, what other operating systems? Okay, and give you a menu of the ones that you could boot to. That one is kind of out of date, I guess. I mean, it's still available, GAG. So the chat room has in the past recommended EasyBCD. This is a little more recent. Does the same thing. EasyBCD. It's not free. That's the only difference. GAG is free because it's open source. So I guess because we know this is up to date, neosmart.net is the publisher, and essentially you can install it after the fact and it will see all the different operating systems, including, by the way, non-Windows operating systems like Linux, and allow you to boot to them. So this is what you need, is a boot manager and EasyBCD. They say they're free for non-commercial use, $30 for commercial, so it's still worth it. The nice thing about something like this is you can run their repair program. If you do the thing that I mentioned, which is install an older operating system on top of a newer one, and it will fix that problem. EasyBCD. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. System Commander from VCOM. That was the first of them, wasn't it? That's a memory. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's my phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. If you'd like to talk high tech, that's what we do here. Our last series of shows for 2014. If you've had a hard time getting in, we're going to keep recording after this show ends. It ends in about an hour and 40 minutes, and we'll keep recording. Is that right? No, 40 minutes. At 2 o'clock, my time, Pacific time, we will wrap the show. But I'm going to keep answering for another couple of hours, all the way to 4 p.m. Pacific. So if you're listening live and you can't get through, which is often the case, there will be a little bit of an easier time of it in about 40 minutes. And it will help me considerably because we can record the show ahead of time. And I can take a little time off for the holidays, if you know what I mean. We're going to Cannes in Seal Beach, California next. Hi, Cannes.
Hi, Leo.
Do you like Can or Con?
Kian.
I left out an I. Hi, Kian.
That's all right.
How are you doing?
I'm good. What can I do for you?
So it's that time of the year, you know, you go to your family's place and your uncle hands you his laptop and says, hey.
Keon, you're the tech guy. Fix it.
That's right.
Yeah, many of us geeks actually, for this reason alone, hate to visit family and friends for the holidays. I should tell you, folks, you're ruining your relationship. Keon goes, not again. All right. In fact, a lot of us bring discs with us now when we travel. Boot discs with fixing tools so we can quickly fix a problem. Do you do that, Keon?
Not anymore, but there was a time.
There was a time. So what's going on?
So, you know, I formatted his computer, blah, blah, blah. And now I'm having the Windows update deja vu.
Oh.
Restarting. Restarting. And I know on my Mac, I just downloaded the like combo updater.
Yeah.
Boom, I'm done. Is there something like that for Windows? Because I'm just sitting there restarting. It's like two updates and then you restart. And
I know. It's horrible, isn't it? No, there isn't. So what Microsoft will do is a roll-up, an update roll-up periodically. They just did one for Windows 8. I think they might have one for Windows 7 that gets you up to a certain point, and then you do the updates from that point on. But that will be offered to you in a Windows update if it's available. So, unfortunately, you pretty much have to do what you're doing, which is running, unless you bring a disk with all the updates on them. But you didn't know the uncle wasn't going to make you do this, so...
Right.
Yeah. It's a pain in the butt. And Microsoft, if they haven't done a roll-up, they used to call, you know, they had different names for them. For a while, they were calling them service packs. Then they decided not to call them service packs. So service pack means something else. Now they call them roll-ups. There is, for instance, Windows 8 has one, but it's not called a service pack. There are offline updates. I mean, you can, like I said, if you prepare ahead of time, download everything onto a disk, or you could even slipstream it into a Windows installer. If you did this more than once, I would make a slipstream installer. And then somebody's suggesting a WSUS offline update. And what this – it's not going to change too much because you're still going to have to download the individual updates. But at least you may not have to do as many reboots or you may not have to pay attention. So it's WSUSoffline.net. That means you download the updates and then install them at your leisure. Since you're sitting there doing this now, I don't think it's going to be that much difference. This is more for planning ahead.
Right. This is like one time. I was just like some big whatever gig file I just throw.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It would be nice. Other systems.
They do it when they go, for instance, from Windows 8 to Windows 8.1, now you have everything up to that point. When you do a Windows 8 update, then now you have everything up to that point, and then there are incremental updates after that. So there are set points, but you have to start with whatever you've got. And if you have a disk that is the original Windows 7 disk, you're going to spend a whole afternoon doing this. Easy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Can I actually share a funny thing that happened?
Sure. What happened? Yeah.
So this morning, my father got a call from one of those... fake tech support.
Yeah.
Talked about him before.
Aren't you glad you were there, Keon?
Yes.
Would he have fallen for it?
I think I taught him well after he's fallen for it before.
He's fallen for it before. Oh, yoy.
Yeah. So he hands me the phone, and I'm like on my Macintosh, and he's telling me, you know, I have errors, blah, blah, blah. And he works for Windows tech support. So I'm just playing dumb, and he tells me, you know, look for the space bar, look for the key that says option key, and I say, okay, I see those keys, and he says, you see the one with the Windows logo between them, and I tell him no, because I'm trying to play, like, I'm on a Mac, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No.
And then he gets kind of frustrated with me, and he says, you don't see it?
No.
And I said, no, there's command key, and I can't believe it. I swear this is what he told me. He told me maybe it's in your, and then he said behind, but he didn't say behind. I was shocked.
He got frustrated with you. And did he hang up after that?
No, he kept repeating it to tell me to look there.
Oh, my
Lord. And then that's when I was like, well, I'm on a Mac, and then he hung up on me. But I actually recorded it, so it was pretty...
I would post that on YouTube. I think you'll get some hits. That's hysterical. Yeah, if anybody's wondering, there are a number of places on YouTube where people have posted these phony calls. They often come, it's kind of interesting, they come from the same call center that you'll call during the day to get help. So these guys kind of do know a little bit about what they're talking about. And the call center, during downtime, when they're not getting any calls, they will say, all right, now you're going to call these numbers at random, and here's your script. And essentially what they'll do is either try to get money out of you. Sometimes it's just, it's you know, they just want you to pay $300 so you can they can, quote, clean your computer. But sometimes they actually actively implant malware on your system, which is really bad. Because they take control of your system if you follow them down the road. These are bogus. And they are cold calling at random, and you shouldn't pay any attention. And it's funny, though, that you could actually frustrate him to the point where he'd start swearing at you.
Yeah, I thought he'd just give up. You know?
I'm trying to make a living here. Would you mind? You mind? Just find your Windows key. What was he going to do, do you think? Oh, he was going to have you hit Control Alt Delete. Yeah. And then.
No, I think he wanted me to look at the, like, he said there
event
was
manager. Yeah, they get you to look at Event Manager. And every. So Windows Event Manager is a view into your Windows log. And every log has errors. It's normal. But what they'll say is, oh, see all those red X's? Which are just normal errors. See all those red X's? That's the infection. How many of them are there? And you'll say, well, there's like lots. There's 30, 40. And they'll go, oh, no. Well, for $300, I'll log into your machine. You got a credit card handy? And then they'll fix your system using remote desktop. It is terrible. It is a terrible scam. Do not fall for it. Keon, you are a good boy. Fixing your relatives' computers, protecting your dad. I like it.
I do what I got to do.
I hope you have a great holiday.
Yeah.
You know,
I'll put
it on YouTube and send me a link. Yeah, I'd love to see it.
Yeah, I'll throw it in the chat.
I can't play it on the air, obviously. Maybe I'll play it during the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I have never gotten this call because I don't have a listed number. But I have yet to get a call like that. They're very widespread. Obviously, whoever's doing these is really doing a lot of them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. They're talking in the chat room about what you could do to prevent those calls from fake support. They often identify themselves as calling from Microsoft itself. Microsoft does not call people at random and say, hey, you've got a problem. These guys are scammers trying to take your money or hack your computer or both. In fact, if they're really dishonest, they'll take your money, hack your computer, and then steal your credit card information. They can really get you. So don't fall for it if you hear it. And, yeah, these guys are operating outside the U.S. They're, if a telemarketer calls you, you can ask them, and they're legitimate. You can say, please put me on your do not call list. And by law, they're supposed to do so and not call you again. But if they're calling from outside the country, they ignore those laws. And they're virtually unprosecutable. So I think it's pretty hard to stop this. And it's pointless to say, please put me on your do not call list. Just hang up on them. Let's just hang up on them. And I don't know why some people get calling. I've never gotten a call like this. Maybe they know I'm the tech guy. No, I think I'm just lucky, I guess. Jess is in Pine, Colorado. Sounds beautiful.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Jess.
Thanks for taking my call. I really enjoy your show, but I'm not a tech person. That's why I'm calling you. I would like to know how to put CDs, music CDs, on my Galaxy S5 and on my Barnes & Noble Nook.
Okay. S5's easy. The first thing you're going to have to do is rip the CDs. In both cases, you're going to have to rip the CDs. That is, make a digital file from the CD. That's pretty easy. Are you on Windows or Mac?
Windows 7.
Okay. So there are a number of programs that you put the CD in the CD. Do you have a CD tray on your computer?
On my machine, I have to plug in a drive.
Okay.
And then it operates as normal.
Yeah. So that's the same thing. Yep. So you plug in that drive, that USB drive, put the CD in there, and then run some ripping software. And actually, there are a lot of choices. I'm not sure. I'm going to ask the chat room what they like today, these days. I haven't ripped any CD in years, what they like for ripping CDs on Windows. But once you rip it, you'll have a file. And I would suggest ripping it to a MP3 file. And what you'll do once you do that, the MP3 file, now we have to copy it over to your phone and over to your Nook. And it's different procedures for both. On the phone, it's pretty straightforward. You plug the phone in. And on a Galaxy S5, it'll usually say, I see you've plugged me in. Would you like me to be an MTP or PTP or phone? PTP is act as a phone, and I mean as a camera. And that means that the camera software that's on your system will load, move the images off the phone, and that's that. It's certainly no good for moving music onto the phone. But you can use the MTP to actually see the phone file structure and then just copy files. If it's music, copy it into the music folder, and whatever you use as a music player should see it if it's in the music folder, and you should be able to play it. There are also ways to do it wirelessly. There's Double Twist is good. There's AirDroid is another way. These will use your Wi-Fi network, and your phone's on the Wi-Fi network, your computer's on the Wi-Fi network, and it'll do it. In terms of burning, by the way, there are a lot of choices. ExactAudioCopy.de is one. CDEXOS.SourceForge.net is another. That's a CD extractor. I've used that for years. I guess that's still around. Tell you what we'll do. We'll put a list on the show notes at TechGuyLabs.com because there's dozens of programs of this. You could even Google CD Ripper and you'd find a number of them. Now, uploading to your Nook is a little bit more complicated. First, you're going to have to connect the Nook to your computer via USB. And I think if you have the right drivers, and that's the trick, and Windows usually will just go out and say, oh, I see something connected. Let me check and see if I can get drivers. If it can download and install the drivers, and that'll take a minute, so be patient. You should have actually a drive pop up on your desktop that says, My Nook. If that's the case, look on the Nook for a folder called My Music, and you can move MP3s over into My Music.
Okay.
And that'll allow you to play it back on the Nook.
So I'll probably have to download some ripping software then.
Yes, that's the first step. And CDEX is awfully good and free. I didn't realize it was still around. I'd used it for years. It's an open source project. If you just Google CDEX for CD extractor, they've actually kept it up to date, which I'm very happy to see. Now, once you get to that page, be careful. Because there's like a download now button, but it is for the ad, not for CDEX. You'll want to get 1.7.5. That's the current version. Click that, and then you'll see a download section that you can get the latest version from. And that's absolutely great. Free. And that works quite well. It'll just see the CD, and it'll turn those CD files into MP3s.
Thank you so much, Leo.
You're welcome. It's a good project. So once you rip them, just the only thing that varies is how you copy it over. And in most USB devices, you can just plug in the device. On the Galaxy, you'll choose MTP mode for media transport. iTunes will do it too, but I hate to put iTunes on a Windows machine unless you absolutely have to. Just personal prejudice. Gary in Long Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Leo. Yeah, I got a desktop that I bought at Goodwill that they put them together now. And they put some good stuff together. And
isn't that nice? That's awesome. And
yeah.
It's probably a good price, right?
Yeah, it was only like $220 or something. It's
That's
got four processors. And
you're supporting Goodwill. And obviously these are computers that people donated to Goodwill. And Goodwill cleans them up, puts software on them, and they're good.
Yeah, they got a lot of that. But this is actually one they put together. Now they're now putting them together.
New computers. Wow, that's great.
Yeah. And I bought all my laptops and desktops there. And it's worked out real well.
Yeah,
and they give you 7 days refund if it doesn't work out.
That's great.
Yeah, and then like for maintenance, if you need repair or something like that, load the operating system in. I think it's like $45, something like that.
That's fabulous.
Anyway, a couple weeks ago, the fan it started making noise, and I figured it was a fan. And I took it apart, took the fan out, and anyway, the fan seems just fine. There's five fans in this thing, and this is the front fan, seems to be making noise the first couple minutes.
So a couple of things to be careful about. When if a wire kind of moves out of place and it's in the way of the fan blade, that could be dangerous. You'll hear a noise like the fan blade's hitting a wire, and eventually it'll cut and short circuit the wire, and that's dangerous. You could actually cause a fire. So if you suddenly hear a noise coming out of your computer, do what you did, which is open it up and make sure that there's nothing impinging on the fan blades, that the blades are spinning freely without hitting anything. You did that, though, it sounds like.
Yeah, I took it out, and it seems just fine. And after 2 minutes, when it's cold, the noise goes away. If it's warmed up, it doesn't make any noise.
So fans have bearings so that they can spin, and if the fan is cold, the bearings are rattling a little bit. But as it warms up and they expand, they stop rattling. You can easily replace any fan.
Yeah.
It's just four screws. And you know a little connector that connects onto the motherboard. Note where the connector's going and which wires are where. There's black and red wires. You want to make sure you orient that fan. It's harmless. It just won't work if you don't. But make sure you get the black to the same pin as the black was on the original fan. You can easily find fans or bring it back to Goodwill. They probably have a box of those, a ton of them.
Yeah.
And they just say this thing's noisy, and they can put a new one in. It's just fans are cheap.
Yeah, I figured that was it.
But. Yeah, and if the bearings rattle a little bit when it's cold and then it gets quiet, that's not unusual. But replacing it would easily fix that. That's a great tip, though, Gary. Thank you. Goodwill for your computer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And if it's a sleeve-bearing fan, says Dexter, just throw it away and get a better fan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Dick DiBartolo is here. Our post-Christmas giz whiz. Dick is Mad Magazine's maddest writer and Belcher numero uno. He also joins us each week to talk about the gadget of the week.
Yes, exactly.
And first of all, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
The same to you. Same to you.
What do you do for New Year? Anything particular?
Well, you know, I'm going to join your podcast network when it's midnight in New York City.
You'll be the ball dropper.
I'll be the ball dropper. Exactly.
Now, you're not going to go out to Times Square for that, right? I mean, that would be...
No, but after, I'm going to run down to Times Square, and I'm going to try and reload it.
Raise the ball, because...
So that when it's 3 o'clock in Petaluma...
Right.
There'll be no one around Times Square. They won't know.
They won't know.
Drop it again. What are they getting? So it'll be.
This always bugs me because even though there are four time zones in the United States and five if you include Hawaii and Alaska, there are five time zones in the United States, and yet when the ball drops at 9 o'clock California time, midnight your time in New York City, that's it. It's over.
Yeah.
The whole country. You're in 2015 now. You know, doesn't matter what time it really is. You know, Hawaii, it's 7 at night. It's early. They're having dinner.
You are slowly changing that with the Twit Network.
So what we decided to do is
I think it's good.
New Year's Day, New Year's Eve, I should say.
Yeah.
The first part of the globe, the world, to enter 2015 is New Zealand. And they do it at 3 a.m. California time, 6 a.m. New York time on New Year's Eve. So we're going to start our broadcast then. A little bit before then, we'll have our first countdown in New Zealand, and then we'll march across the globe and have a countdown in every time zone.
And every time zone becomes important.
Because they all are important. Yeah. Going right up to the very bitter end, the Solomon Islands, where they celebrate New Year 2015 at 3 a.m. New Year's Day of my time, 6 a.m. your time. So we're going to do a 24-hour broadcast, and you're part of that.
I am.
Awesome. I am. Are you coming out or are you going to stay home and just do it via Skype?
I'm going to stay home because 2 days later I have to go to Vegas for CES.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's horrible. Crap. Gosh, yeah. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
Better you than me.
Yes, I know. I will be videotaping some stuff for Twitter.
I know. That'll be
there.
Fun. Yeah.
But meanwhile, to tell you about one gadget that we'll be seeing at CES, kind of innovative. It is called VisiJax. Commuter jacket, and it is the jacket with built-in LED directional signals.
So as you're walking, you could say, I'm about to make a left?
Well, mainly for people biking. Okay, so there's LED, red LEDs in the back all the time, flashing LEDs on the lapels all the time. But when you lift an arm to make a turn, signal lights in the arm go on. And when you put your arm down, they will light for 5 more seconds and then extinguish themselves.
This is actually smart.
It's very clever.
I think this is a great idea. If you've ever ridden a bicycle at night, you know how hard it is to see. If you've ever driven a car and missed a bicyclist because it was so dark, this is a lifesaver. I like this idea.
Yeah, I think it will be. It started in the UK. They got an innovation award. It's UK Amazon, but they'll be introducing it at CES, and it should be available in the U.S. soon.
V-I-S-I-J-A-X. VisitJax.com, and they have a variety of sizes and colors. And, you know, I don't ride my bike day or night without lots of blinking, flashy lights on it. Cause,
oh, good. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I know visibility. Yeah. It's so hard.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I wish everybody did, because I have to say, we have a lot of cyclists here in our farm country up in Northern California. And many's the time in the middle of the night, I've just kind of a cyclist has come out of nowhere, and I've went, oh, my gosh. I know,
because you have very curvy roads.
I don't want to hit anybody. Yeah, that's the last thing I want to do. So please be visible. You know, make it easier for us to avoid you. Exactly. So Dickie D, go to gizwiz.biz. It's the last chance to play the What the Heck Is It contest. It ends New Year's Eve. Chance to win an autographed copy of Maggot Magazine. Identify a close-up photo of a gadget, either correctly or incorrectly. You have a chance to win an autographed, I know, it's an easy contest, an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, autographed by this guy right here, Dick DiBartolo. Happy New Year, Dick. I can't wait to see you next week. Actually, next Wednesday for our New Year's
next
Eve
Wednesday.
Party.
Next Wednesday.
Yeah,
I'll be there.
All right, Dickie D. Mark Malibu, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling, Mark.
I have a question. I think I'm one of the holdouts on the AT&T unlimited data plan, my wife and I, and now we've added a 12-year-old to our plan, and our bill is outrageous at about $200 a month, which I think, and we don't even use our phones probably like we should or could. But I'm just wondering if we're holding out on the unlimited data and taking advantage of something that AT&T kind of regrets extending the offer to.
Oh, yeah. Very much so. They've even admitted it. The CEO of AT&T.
You know, like, are we giving something up? You know, we could trade down to a smaller, more limited plan and it would save us about $30 a month. But if, you know, once you give it up, you can't get it back. So we're kind of caught in this limbo of like, do we keep it or do we not?
You're not alone. There are a lot of people in your shoes. When this all started with the iPhone.
Right.
And AT&T at the time thought, oh, we'll offer unlimited data to new iPhone buyers. And if you had an unlimited plan, as long as you kept in good standing and kept buying new stuff, they'd keep you on it. And so I know many people with iPads and iPhones who have, you know, and it's actually been good for AT&T. It's a great customer retention plan. But the CEO of AT&T is on record. He says, if I have but one regret, it's that I ever offered unlimited data. Because what they didn't know at the time was that iPhone users would be gluttonously consuming data. And it really brought their network down for years. AT&T suffered because of it. They have incentivized you to get rid of it. They're going to, and by the way, Verizon too. Anybody who offers unlimited data is doing everything they can to get you to stop.
Yeah.
So it it may be, in fact, that you can save money. I'm no expert on AT&T plans. So you just, and by the way, navigating any of these is difficult because they don't want to make it easy.
Right.
You know, they don't want to make it so that you can find the best deal. They like that $200 a month they're getting out of you.
Absolutely.
But they also don't want the unlimited data. So one thing you could do is go to an AT&T store or call. I like to do it in the store, but if you want, call a rep on the phone and say, look, just pose the question just as you did with me. I don't want to pay this much money. And if there's the veiled threat that maybe you'll leave AT&T, they might even get a little bit more serious about making you an offer you can't refuse.
Right.
And I think being willing to give up unlimited data probably is a useful, you know, arrow in your quiver. I'm not sure I'd pull the trigger on it unless you were sure you were getting a better deal. But the other thing you could do as ammunition before you do this, look at your bill, see how much data you use. You probably don't use as much as you think. even with the three of you, it may be that 5 gigs shared is plenty, or 6 gigs or 10 gigs shared is plenty. So know how much, look over the last 6 months, don't do just 1 month, but get an idea of how much data y'all use, and knowing that your kid's going to use more and more and more as time goes by.
Right, absolutely.
but probably you use less than you think you do.
And are we heading into an era, though, when unlimited data isn't even a thing? I mean, like,
absolutely. Everybody's phasing it out. And you'll notice there's all sorts of little... Once you kind of get savvy to this, you can just watch them squirming and saying, hey, move to our new shared plan where you get 10 gigabytes for the four of you and it's only $80 a month. And they want to move you off and they're incentivizing you to do this. The other thing that's changing is that Wi-Fi is everywhere now. Unlimited 4G may not be the deal that it seems. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great new year. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.